Shalom, damn it! It's 11 o'clock at night and time for Dave's Gone By, a comedy talk show on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. It's not the best show on the radio, but let's face it, do you really deserve the best? No, so sit back and settle.
When a man is born, he's born with the foreskin. But the complete man is to be without the foreskin.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, swirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, welcome, everyone, on this Sunday night, this beautiful Sunday night, October 12th, 2008, for the 294th episode of Dave's Gone By. Kind of a special one, kind of a more personal one than usual tonight, because it's familial. It's been such a lousy year in so many ways. For so many folks and the people I know, I mean, everybody's having a rotten week. Anybody, even if you don't have money per se in the stock market, you're looking at the numbers day after day. And if you're like me, there's a certain excitement in the catastrophe of it. I'd be doing my work at my computer all day, and every couple of minutes I'd be checking Yahoo stock prices again, just to see how bad it was going to get, just to see things go into free fall, because it isn't personal to me. I'm so broke I don't have any money waiting around in GM or IBM or in the stock market, unfortunately. Like most of the folks I know, not all, but most of the people I know, their money is in a few bonds here and there and 401ks. That's where everybody's really sweating. Because otherwise it's just a bunch of rich people losing a lot of money very quickly over the past week. And then there's this kind of, for all us folks who don't have money, you're like, oh, you know, I don't, doesn't hurt me so much, and nice to see some rich folks come down to my level a little bit. Which is not fair, which is not very nice, which is not even very true. But there is that little twist of the knife for, you know, you hear someone who lost, I don't know, they had $6 million in the stock market and they lost $3 million in 3 days. And that's got to hurt. That's got to be a horrible, terrible thing. But my God, what I would give to have $3 million to lose in the stock market. I can't even think in those terms. What I can think of is that I've got still a little bit of money in my 401k. And I've still got, I guess some bond stuff here and there. So it does affect me. It does affect everyone. I'm wondering if this might be Jeff Goodman on the line. Let's see. Let's see who's on the line. WGBB, you're on the air with Dave's Gone By. Hello? No. Ah. Well, whoever it was, please don't call back until we're actually taking phone calls. By the way, when I say Jeff, I mean Jeff Goodman, my usual co-host on this radio program. He's, not sure where he is. He may be taking another powder this week. He took off the week before because he was in such a horrible mood about the stock market. I can't imagine what mood he was in considering what happened to the Dow Jones this particular week. But anyway, what I'm saying is, okay, so everybody's having a rotten week for various reasons, even if, like me, you're a bit of a sadist, and you kind of want to see other people hurting if you're hurting in different ways. And plus, I mean, it was a rotten summer. My back went out, and my wife had a death in her family, a fairly close one, and she's working, but she has to work out of town half the week, and I'm having trouble trying to bring some more money in to pay some bills. I mean, it's just ich after ich after ich after ich. And so it's kind of nice that on all days, of all days, on Yom Kippur last week, which would have been Thursday, we had a birth in the family. Not me personally, but my cousin Stephanie and her husband Adam had a little baby girl early in the morning on Yom Kippur, and so, you know, very, very happy for her. And I thought, my gosh, you know, she just gave birth a couple of days ago. Let's get her on the radio show. Let's say congratulations to Cousin Steph and put her on Dave's Gone By, hear about her pregnancy, hear about the birth. Totally not a subject we generally go into on this radio program, but I thought, my God, it's so close, and she just had the kid, and I think we're going to have a little fun with her and with her husband, Adam, and we may even, I'm thinking we might even get Rabbi Saul Solomon in here to give her a special convocation and blessing over the child, little baby Logan. That's why we're calling this program Logan's Run, in honor of Stephanie's kid. So we're going to be talking to my cousin Stephanie pretty soon in this program. We're also going to be talking during the Inside Broadway segment, when we're going to be reviewing three shows tonight on Inside Broadway, including The Seagull, that big starry new revival of the Anton Chekhov play that got amazing reviews. I'm going to let you know what I thought of it. Also, the Signature Theater is doing First Breeze of Summer, which is a revival of an old Negro Ensemble Company show. The Signature is spending its whole season doing shows from the heyday of the Negro Ensemble Company. This is a Leslie Lee play, and I'm going to tell you what I thought of First Breeze of Summer. And also, we're going to be reviewing the musical 13. This is a show about teenagers, completely populated by teenagers, and I'm going to be reviewing it. I don't know, my co-host Jeff has come into the building, but I don't think he's seen it. However, someone who has is Joel Markowitz, and he is a writer for DCTheaterScene.com, and he's been in town to see some New York shows. So we're going to be talking to Joel about the musical 13 during Inside Broadway. So there's quite a lot to do tonight on Dave's Gone By, this October 12th and our 294th episode of the show, which is an hour of comedy, talk radio, interviews, music, and more. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, theater critic, and terrified American, and I'm here with my guest co-host, who is a bon vivant and a man about town.
All around
man about town. I'll get that right someday. Jeff Goodman. How you holding up, Jeff?
Hey,
tough,
Dave.
Tough week, I know, but how you holding up?
Oh, well, you know, by the strings of my barrel.
Actually, did you just make that up?
Yeah.
That's very, very good. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you were so depressed last week coming in from the week before of what was going on financially in America. I can't even begin.
That just doesn't matter anymore.
No, it'll bounce back, but it's going to take a year. Yeah, it'll probably go down into the low 7,000s and then slowly, slowly inch.
Can you imagine they have wiped out the entire profit in the stock market for the last 6 or so years?
Hey, can I imagine? Who has been the president since the year 2000? Anything can happen with this president that we have. Come on. Actually, you know what? If we have time at the end, I want to do all this economic stuff later on.
It's very funny, but I was listening to a newscast and they were interviewing someone.
Yeah.
About the market and stuff. They said, maybe Bush should just not speak anymore. Because every time he opens his mouth, the market plunges.
That's right. He tried to sell the $700 billion package. It failed. They had to double back and reduce some of it, and then it passed.
Well, we got a couple of... It was a good thing, because we got the executives from AIG to go on a spa retreat, which was...
Actually, you know the whole story with that. It wasn't the executives, or maybe it was one or two of them, but it was really for their salespeople. It was a thing that was set in place a year ago.
It doesn't make a difference.
I know. They canceled the second one. That was nice of them. They were going to do another one the following week. And then the PR was so explosive at that point that they just said...
Well, it really is. They would have been out of business, but the government bailed them out, and then they spent half a million dollars.
Well, how do you reward salespeople? That's the question, though.
You pay them a salary.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, not selling so well if the company's ready to go under.
Good point.
When your top salesman sold $6, not so good.
Hey, actually, I could use them to sell advertising for this particular program.
No, they'd lose your money, too.
Yeah. Well, thank God. Thank God we're making a little dough thanks to our sponsors on this program. You want to help me do the sponsors of Dave's Gone sure. By? Okay, why don't you begin with your own?
Well, with Fancy Schmancy Balloons?
Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Why should people call you?
Why not? If you're having a party and you want excellent decorations, dial 516-797-3229.
What was that again?
Oh, they call for the number again. 516-797-3229.
Fancy Schmancy Balloons to really make your party look amazing with balloons and centerpieces and pretty much any other decor for any party. And hey, we've got Thanksgiving coming up. Not too early to think about Christmas parties either. You can do that all. Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Tell us about Hewlett Minuteman Press, please.
The Copy Kings of Broadway.
For 65 years, Hewlett Minuteman Press.
They're like almost about to retire then.
No, they're going strong, man. They've been around, and they'll be around, God willing, dozens and dozens of more years. So why do you read, and I know you do, I know you subscribe to Hewlett Minuteman Press, Jeff. Why do you subscribe?
I subscribe to Minuteman Press.
To Performing Arts Insider.
Because it's the best darn publication on Broadway and off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway and beyond that.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's insightful. Mm-hmm. It has all the information I'll ever need, and I love it.
I do, too. Granted, I'm a little biased because I help run the thing. But for Dave's Gone By listeners who are interested in Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway, go to performingartsinsider.com or go to my website, davesgoneby.org, because that's going to give you all the info that you need to get a cheap, well, relatively, more inexpensive subscription. Normally it costs about $175 a year, but Dave's Gone By
listeners... Oh, and it's so worth it.
It's worth it at that price. Imagine how much it's worth it at $120. That's the price for your subscription for Dave's Gone By listeners to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Now, I may have misspoke before. Did I say Hewlett Minuteman Press and then mean Performing Arts Insider?
Yeah.
Tell us about Hewlett Minuteman Press.
They were the Copy
Kings. They're the Copy Kings of Broadway. Okay.
Are they there for 65 years?
No, they're there since the 1970s.
Okay, because you kind of said they were there.
Yeah,
for
now I got distracted
years.
By someone coming in to do some office.
I know, someone came in, gave you money in an envelope, and left.
I only wish it were for me. No, this has to go in the safe for someone else here. So, anyway.
Let's take out cut.
Yeah, listen, how much
don't
is
we get a percentage?
Nice money. You think if I replaced these with dollar bills, they would notice?
Why don't we just replace it with cut paper? No.
Yeah, you have any green shoe polish or something?
Sure, no problem.
We should do it. But everybody should also...
But Hewlett Minuteman Press is like located across the street from Lohmann's and are now next door to the now-defunct Lohmann Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have a moment of silence for Lohmann Shoes?
Oh, they went out 2 months ago. We can't really mourn them anymore.
2 months ago.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, two or three months ago, they're gone. The store is still empty, although the regular Lohmann's is still there across the street. So look for the Lohmann's, point your direction the other way, and you'll
and
see
if you need some shoes, copy them.
Exactly. Put your shoes on their Xeroxes. You get 10% off if you're a Dave's Gone By listener at Hewlett Minuteman Press.
It's like a great shoe sale.
Okay, pretty much.
Only with copies.
There's no business like shoe business, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. And finally, our new sponsor, God bless him, we have a recent sponsor.
That wonderful deli.
The Woodrow, located on Peninsula Boulevard, in the Peninsula Shopping Center, actually. At let's see, what is that next to? Well, it's next to a couple of other restaurants, and it's next to a big toy store, and it's next to a big shopping supermarket.
And you leave off the last W4?
Wow. What was it going to be?
We were having a contest.
Contest,
remember?
Right. We're not going to give out any of the entrance yet, but tell the contest again. What
the contest is, we're making up a new slogan for the Woodrow, which is leave off the last W for...
Wow, something.
Or if you have a better phrase, please enter that.
Yeah, give us a slogan that we can advertise the Woodrow Delicatessen, and you will win at the end of... it's the end of October or the end of November, you said?
End of November. It's for Thanksgiving.
For Thanksgiving. You will win a lunch for two, provided for us by Jeff Goodman at the Woodrow Delicatessen.
It's now, lunch for two as long as you're on a diet.
No. It's not even dinner. You can spring for a lunch if they win. Thank you very much
Get it out of an envelope.
So how are you going to write this slogan? You're going to do it because you'll know these things about the Woodrow Delicatessen. It's delicious. It's kosher.
It's delightful.
It's been around for 40-something years in the same place and making fresh, delicious cold cuts and entrees in the great deli tradition.
And it has
York.
No ending W.
No, it's Woodrow Deli.
Woodrow. R-O-O-D-R-O.
No, W-O-O-D-R-O.
That
would have been Rudro.
Oh, I went to China for a second.
It took out all the W's there. No, it's Wood,
W-O-O-D-R-O.
Deli.com. Oh, and it's also the Woodrow Deli. So go there, please. It's on the Peninsula Shopping Center. I've been going there since literally I was 12 years old, from when my family moved out to Long Island. Been having their pastrami, their frankfurters, their Hawaiian chicken salad, their chicken dishes, Polynesian
the
knish?
Chicken.
The knishes are good. They got the round ones. They've also got the square ones. You name it.
How about pickles?
Pickles are free. You get a big bowl of pickles on the table. You get bread, sliced rye bread on the table with your order. Coleslaw. They have potato, but I guess you have to order potato salad, but they have coleslaw that they give you with a meal.
They get the beets or the tomatoes as stewed tomatoes.
Stewed zucchini. That's really good as a side dish. It's absolutely delicious. If you're looking for something more vegetable, like my wife is a vegetarian. We go to the Woodrow Deli, she orders a vegetable omelet, and she loves it. It's delicious. The Woodrow Deli, check it out and tell them Dave sent you. Well, we're running a little behind already, so let's go into this episode of Dave's Gone By. We're calling it Logan's Run in honor of my new little cousin. She's not going to be on the air, but I think her mom and her dad are. We'll be with them, this wonderful new family, right after these messages. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this very special Sunday night, October 12th. It's special in my family because after quite a bit of relentless, not-so-good news, not just for the country, but it was a rough summer, it was a rough year, we had a bit of good news, spectacularly good and happy news in my family this week. And I'm going to let the person to whom the good news happened tell you. She's my cousin Stephanie, and she's on the phone here to talk about, well, what did you do this week, Stephanie?
Oh, it was pretty exciting. I had a baby this week.
Your own, right?
My own baby.
Yay! Mazel tov. Tell us.
Thank you.
It was it early? Was it on time? Was it, what was it?
She was right on time. I was due October 8th, and she was born October 9th at 2 a.m. in the morning. 2:04 to be exact.
Mit Mazel. What's her name?
Her name is Logan Emily.
Logan Emily. I assume you needed an L for reasons.
We need an L. Her first name is named after my father.
Okay.
And her middle name, Emily, is named after my father-in-law, whose name was Eric.
Oh, okay. And what made you choose, though, Logan specifically, as opposed to Lori or Lucy, or Lainey? Or Lichamachaluch, which is an old Jewish name that some people have used.
Because that's probably a mouthful, and she'd probably be in third grade before she could spell it. But Logan, my husband decided that when we first found out I was pregnant that he knew we needed an L.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how about the name Logan? And I said, I like the sound of it.
Cool.
We went through a couple of other L names, and we didn't like any of them as much.
Do you know what the Hebrew?
It was a little different.
Do you know what the Hebrew name for Logan would be?
No, I don't.
Are you gonna have a naming thing or any kind of something like that? Because it's a girl, you're not obviously not gonna have her circumcised. She's not African.
No, well, we tried that, and they said no in the hospital.
Oh, really? Yeah.
We are. We're gonna have a baby naming probably in the beginning of December.
Oh, so you can wait on that? It doesn't have to be within a week or two or something?
Nope, anytime.
Oh.
I just kind of welcome her into the Jewish religion. You have a baby naming.
Right, but it doesn't have to be within a week or two.
No time frame.
Awesome. And by the way, Logan is happy and healthy and all that kind of thing?
She is. She's wonderful. With a full head of hair.
A full? Really?
Yes.
She came out with a mane, huh? What,
she did.
I assume she's dark.
Oh, dark as in dark hair? She's not tanned yet.
Yes, dark as in dark hair. Or
yes,
dark skin would be a bit of a shock at this point, yeah.
She's got dark brown hair and grayish blue, more dark gray eyes.
Oh, really? She got the light eyes. Or will those change, do you think?
They'll probably change.
Cool.
But you never know because Adam has Adam has, like, hazel eyes, hazel, green, gray.
Right.
And mine are brown, so I'm hoping they kind of stay the color they are.
Now, being honest, although Adam does not exactly have the best eyes,
no.
They're very good-looking eyes, but unfortunately he has all sorts of little medical problems with them. How's he doing with that?
He's good. He's doing okay.
Good. Well,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, obviously.
It's not genetic, so we'll be okay.
Now, how big was Logan, or is Logan?
Logan, when she was first born, she was 6 pounds, 8 ounces.
Oh, 6'8". Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And 19 inches long.
Uh-huh. If only I were. Yeah, but, you know, thank you very much.
And when we took her home, she was 6 pounds, 3 ounces.
So you're starving her, basically? You're...
No, the baby loses a little bit of weight in the right after they're born.
Why is that?
I'm not really sure, actually. But
okay.
They say it's healthy and it's normal, so that's all that mattered to us.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, was it an easy process? It seemed to be you were walking around 8.5 months doing everything completely like you were. You were teaching, right?
I was, and more ironic than that, I was on Monday, 3 days before she was born.
Uh-huh.
As you know, I'm a phys ed teacher in Brooklyn, and I was doing jumping jacks with my class.
Now, are you retarded? I mean, why would you do that? You're a pregnant woman, 8.5 months. Why would you do jumping jacks with children?
Because I was very lucky. I had a wonderful pregnancy. It was easy from beginning to end until I got to the labor and delivery part. And I felt good, and I wanted to stay active and moving around, and I thought it'd be best for me and best for the baby. And, I didn't do my full-out jumping jacks. I took it carefully.
Did you do your squat thrusts? Did that make the baby come a little faster?
I did. I did my squats like my Lamaze teacher taught me to.
Really? Okay.
I did. They do. They tell you to do squats.
Uh-huh.
And I just walked around a lot and stayed active and moving, and because I felt good and I felt like I could do it, and I didn't overdo it, so.
And you carried totally in the belly.
I looked like I had a basketball under my shirt, and that was it.
Literally. It was amazing. I mean, how much did you weigh at your weightiest, like 120?
No, we'll keep that a secret, but I did not gain a lot of weight. Not intentionally. I didn't watch myself. I certainly didn't starve myself. You know, I ate healthy. I didn't change my eating when I got pregnant. Some people, you know, take pregnancy and say, okay, hot fudge sundaes at night. And as good as they sound, and I had my one or two, I didn't crave anything, so I just ate normal, and I put on 23 pounds, to be exact.
23 pounds for a 7-pound kid. That's all right. Now, I always thought you were a vegetarian, but you'll have chicken?
No, I'm not a vegetarian. I don't eat red meat or fish. It's not because of any belief. I just don't like it.
You don't like the taste of it. But
no.
Chicken, you're okay. You kind of dig.
Chicken, turkey, yeah, absolutely.
And so when you were pregnant, you had some of that without having to have red meat the whole time.
Yeah.
There was no point at which the doctor said you should have meat or you were having a perfectly fine diet for the kid.
Yeah. And
cool.
I like beans, and I like, you know, I eat a lot of things that have protein in it, peanut butter.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, when I first got pregnant, my one stability, which is chicken, was my biggest aversion. So my first couple of, probably the first 2 or 3 months I was pregnant, I didn't eat any chicken.
Well, I don't get it. You were just in your
luck. I couldn't even look at it.
Really?
It was nauseating to me. Chicken cutlets, chicken breasts. Chicken wings, chicken nuggets, anything that I always eat.
Chicken nuggets are generally nauseating to everybody, but...
No, I love chicken nuggets.
Yeah, okay.
They're my favorite. But chicken fingers, but I couldn't even look at them.
Good
so
Lord.
My first couple of weeks, I lived on macaroni and cheese. That was a good thing.
Yeah.
Carbs become your best friend because they kind of settle a little bit of nausea.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. So
did you have much morning sickness? Did you deal with...
I had very little...
Cool.
I never got sick and a little nausea, but I was very, very lucky, to say the least.
Now, the one thing about having a kid in this day and age is because there's 4 zillion TV channels and there's 100 gazillion internet sites and books and things, how did you keep from being overwhelmed with information?
I had, you know, the first thing someone brought me was what to expect when you're expecting.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And at the very beginning, I said, great, wonderful, I've got 9 months to read this book. and I read probably the first 100 pages and then stopped reading for a while and read a couple more pages. And then about 3 weeks ago, I realized the baby's coming in soon, and I crash read another few chapters.
Okay, yeah.
And you can't believe everything that you read.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you'll make yourself crazy because there's so many things out there. What can happen? You can go crazy doing it. So you have to take everything in stride. And if you want to go crazy reading things and looking up on things, you can. The information is definitely out there, especially with the internet now.
Right, exactly. But I just figured the temptation, every single thing you look up, and then you look up something else, and two things contradict each other, and you just get...
Yes. Things definitely contradict each other,
swamped.
And that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And you're not sure really what to believe. But I'm one of those people that what's going to happen is going to happen. And you listen to a lot of people. People love to tell you horror stories. As soon as you get pregnant, everyone has to share their story with you.
but you don't. Amazingly enough, you don't have a horror story even for the labor and delivery. You went in at what, like 8 o'clock at night?
I went in. It was actually 6 o'clock at night, Wednesday night.
Uh-huh.
And I was still, I walked into the hospital smiling, and all the nurses said to me, "Are you sure you're in labor?" And I said, "Well, my obstetrician just told me that I was 4.5 centimeters dilated, so I should be here." And I said, I feel okay. I said, I'm a little uncomfortable every couple of minutes.
Right.
But I feel okay. And they said, "Are you really sure you're in labor?" And I said, "I believe so." So they, hooked me up to all the machines, and they said, "Yeah, you are." And then, by about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I was really starting to get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And by about 8:30, I was willing to have an epidural because the last few contractions were, you see stars.
Oh, really? They're that? Oof, okay.
Well, yeah, so they get bad. They get nasty. So,
And so once you had the epidural, it's a shot in the spine, right? That's all it is?
Yeah, what it actually is they give you a numbing shot first in your spine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, in the I can't remember what part. But first they give you like a numbing shot.
Yeah.
And then they actually give you another shot, and they insert a catheter into your spine.
Oh, yay. Well, yeah, so that you have a constant... Yeah, okay. Ooh.
But when you're in that much pain, you're willing to do anything, and this is coming from the person who's terrified of needles.
Exactly, yeah.
So I was okay with whatever they were going to do to me.
Well, I assume the second shot with the catheter didn't hurt because you had the first shot.
Right. I mean, you feel, a little twinge here and there, and then actually the anesthesiologist says you're going to feel almost like electric shocks going down your leg. And you do. You almost feel like your leg got electrocuted and it starts, like, jumping a little bit. But it's only a couple of seconds, and then literally within 10 minutes, the pain's completely gone.
Uh-huh.
I laid there for the next, 3 hours, not even knowing I was having contractions.
You didn't even feel pressure?
I felt nothing. It was a godsend. I said to one of my friends who's 8 months pregnant, I said, "Don't be afraid. Get the epidural."
I'm getting an epidural next time I go to the dentist.
I'm telling you, and I said, as long as it's safe for me and the baby, as long as it's safe for the baby, first of all. And they said, as long as it's safe, I'm not trying to prove anything to anyone. I said, I am not, if it's safe, I'll have it. And it made it much more bearable.
Whoa. And so you, first of all, it was a natural all the way kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I had a... I don't know if I should say it on the radio, but a vaginal delivery.
Yes, okay.
And
the cougar is intact, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a little bent out of shape right now, but yes.
Thanks for the image. Okay, yeah. Good Lord. Well, no, mazel tov. So you didn't have a cesarean or anything like that. Was it regular feet first kind of a thing? Or
head first.
Oh, head first, that's right.
Head first.
Head first.
Yeah, you want them to come out head first.
Now, when that was happening, since you weren't in any pain, were you able or did you want to look at that? Or were you just eyes closed looking up, did not want to see that coming out of you?
Well, what happens is the epidural ran out at 12 o'clock.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So what they do is the baby happened to be, head down, right, ready in position, so ready to start pushing. So what you have to do is you actually have to wait for the epidural to start to wear off when you feel the contractions coming. Because you have to know when to push.
Yeah.
They can't tell you. You have to feel it. So, in my head, I said, okay, as soon as I start to feel this a tiny bit, I'm going to push like crazy because I don't want the epidural to wear off completely and then have to push. So as soon as I started to feel a little bit of pressure, I said, okay, I'm ready to push. And I had to push for a little under an hour, which, you know, some people push two times and the baby flies out.
Yeah, right.
Some people push for 3 hours. So I was pretty lucky in that area, too. But it's draining. It's exhausting pushing. And it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The epidural starts to wear off more and more. So, I had my eyes closed just because I was drained from pushing.
Oh.
And by that point, you kind of really don't want to see too much. But, finally when the baby did come out, the doctor almost dropped her. The second doctor had to catch her.
Oh, that's nice.
She was a little slippery.
Yeah, okay.
But thank goodness she's okay. And they put her right onto your abdomen. So you see her, and she's a little messy looking.
Uh-huh.
But she was beautiful.
Aww.
And
did your husband cut the umbilicus, or did you?
The umbilical cord. He was there the whole time right next to me.
Aww.
He was great. So, he cut the umbilical cord. And then I did something called, I saved the cord blood.
Oh, that's the thing for DNA. I just read something in the newspaper about cord blood and how they're using that. So they're going to freeze it, right, or something. And it's there just in case your kid has a disease down the line. And is that what it is?
Yeah, basically what they do is they take all the cord blood out of the umbilical cord. You send away for it. There's several companies that do it, but you send away for a kit.
You have to have, like, some box tops and things. And yeah.
So, and you get the kit in the mail, and you bring it with you to the hospital. And what they do, as soon as the baby's born and they cut the cord, they take the blood, and the company comes to pick the blood up within 2 hours of the baby being born.
Wow.
And it's taken right to the lab. It's, tested for a whole bunch of things, and then it's frozen. And basically what it is, God forbid, if your baby or any of your children, if you do it one time, it's good for any of your children.
Oh.
And if, God forbid, any of your children are born with a whole slew of diseases, they have hopefully enough of the stem cells that they can heal the baby.
So that's what they're getting from the blood, is the stem cells.
Yes.
Because to make extra money, we've been renting half of our downstairs fridge for cord blood. We keep, obviously, extra soda and leftovers and leftover cake in the basement fridge, but we weren't using half the fridge, so we figured...
That works.
Yeah, there's cord blood to the right and food to the left. It works. It's
hope
really
you never
cool.
mix it up for ketchup.
I have to say those fries tasted a little peculiar the other day.
There you go.
Yeah. By the way... I've been talking. This has been so much fun, and I want to wish you, of course, a big, big mazel tov and happiness
Thank
and health
you.
To Logan Emily Shefflin. But I do want to get your husband in on the act. And meanwhile, like breathing over my shoulder because he wants to be part of this too, is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And he's such a friend of mine and of my family too that I want him to be part of this great celebration. So I'm going to bring the rabbi in, and if you want to bring your husband, Adam, the rabbi can talk to him and do kind of a man talk sort of a thing, a guy-to-guy thing.
Okay, not a problem at all.
So congratulations again. Well, may it live to 100 and, not yet, may she live to 120-something or more. Maybe everybody will live by 120-something by the time, her time rolls around. So bring on your husband. Bring on, and I'll bring on the rabbi.
Okay, sure. He's right here. Hold on 1 second.
You got it. Rabbi? What? Oh, finally you gave off the phone.
Hello?
The microphone. Shalom!
Yes, hello.
Shalom! Damn it, hello! Mazel tov, mazel! You father, you, how are you?
Thank you very much. Very good. Thank you very much.
So I was listening to Dave talking to your wife, Stephanie, about the labor and the delivery. You were there for the whole time to watch everything, right?
I saw everything except the kid come out. I missed that part.
What do you mean you missed it? What, were you taking a pee? How do you miss that part?
It's a sad story, but I missed it.
It's like watching Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments. And I was good. I was watching it with Charlton Heston. There was Barry, but the crossing of the Red Sea, I was popcorn. How the hell did you miss the thing being born?
I blinked.
Good.
I saw it beforehand and I saw it afterwards. I didn't see the thing.
Oh, my. And you cut the umbilicus thing?
Yes, I did.
Was that sickening or was it really cool?
It was really cool.
Oh, this is mom. So tell me something. So what does it feel like? Obvious question, of course. What does it feel like to be a daddy?
A little better than being a mommy. There's no breastfeeding involved, but...
That would be the fun part, but...
Yeah.
Damn it. Yeah, but no, I mean, do you feel more of a mature person or a man, or do you just feel the same, only now you have this thing that you have to feed?
Yes. The second one is true, but I cannot say that, for she's listening.
So I wondered this about babies also. Is it seeing anything? Has it opened its eyes?
It looks at me. It knows who I am already.
Really? Oh, this is marvelous.
I mean, she knows who I am, not it. She knows who I am.
She knows who I am. I'm sorry to be the it thing. I get my pronouns confused. And she knows you're the father.
That is correct.
Wow. Or at least she assumes, because let's face it, you'll never really know. You never really know with women. But let's assume that you are the father. Mazel tov, mazel tov.
That's a big assumption.
Now, can you two pinpoint the night that you created Logan Emily? Do you remember?
Sure can.
Oh, what happened? When was it? What was the...
It was sometime in January.
Well, this I could have figured out, but what... You know, was it a particular romantic evening, or...
It was raining out.
Okay.
And it was cold.
So you had nothing else to do, so you leaped into the bed, and did you do a special thing where you said, okay, I'm going to get you pregnant on this one?
That is exactly what happened. We were eating dinner, and I said, tonight's the night.
Really?
That is correct.
Wow, but you know, and I do take a little bit of an edge, you weren't married at that point. Naughty, naughty, naughty. Why were you trying to do this out of order then?
It's funny you mention that, because when I said to her, tonight is the night, she thought tonight was the night we were going to get engaged. Little did she know.
Little did she know. Well, you were putting something on something, but it wasn't a ring on a finger, let me tell you. You were leaving something off something. Anywho. Did you have that moment after it was done where you looked at her and you went, you know, I think we made a Logan?
I think I remember saying that to her.
Wow. So then... Was that the impetus to get married a little while later?
Not even a little bit.
So the marriage would have been anyway you were hoping to do it.
That is correct.
Oh, man.
I was waiting for August 3rd, 2008. Yeah.
And what was the significance of August 3rd, 2008?
I just always thought about that when I was a kid growing up. I said, I want to get married August 3rd, 2008.
You must have been a very strange child, let me tell you. By the way, how are your eyes? Stephanie said they're okay, but...
I got both of them. One of them wasn't mine.
Do you have different corneas now or something like that?
Yes. Yes, I do.
So,
it was a good deal. It was a good deal. I got it on sale, actually.
Two for one. Well, you're both teachers and you both have pupils. Damn it. Speaking of the fact that you are both teachers, how are you going to balance now, both of you, working and raising a thing?
Well, it was very simple with the decision. We decided we both would stop working.
For how long? Forever?
Well, as long as we can.
But this is nice.
2 years.
I would like to do that.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to stop working forever now. I'll let the government pay me because they're bailing everybody else out. Let them bail me out. I'm taking off.
I agree. And we get a tax deduction, so we can even work less.
Very good. Have you chosen, like, the high school already and what college she's going to go to?
Funny you mention it. We're actually going on Wednesday to set up a college fund.
It's a very wise idea.
We're going to try to push it through within 2 years. Instead of the usual 4 or 5 years, we're going to go for a 2-year college plan.
Please, a year and a half. It's still cheaper yet. And you probably should do it for elementary schools now. Do you think you'll go public or private or pubic or what?
Pubic after public.
Pubic after public. That makes sense to me. Well, Adam Shefflin, so much good news on this, because you had the wedding recently, you had the baby recently, so much mazel, so much happiness, and you just moved into a house, am I right?
That is correct.
How did that work out?
It's working out lovely. We're painting as she breastfeeds the baby, she takes a break, and then she paints special paint, milk paint.
Milk?
No odors.
Oh, is that really true?
That is true. They came out with a new paint. It's a milk-based paint.
So, in other words, the toxic fumes don't even smell. So,
that's
this
correct.
Is a good thing. I like this.
Actually, after she's done breastfeeding, I hold the baby and she paints the walls and everything.
Well, you know, you got to put it to work because she'll get lazy.
That
you know
correct.
How women are. I'm sorry to say it, but it's...
I hope my daughter follows in her footsteps, a hard worker.
Now, I don't mean to offend by this question, but it is important to me, if to no one else. Are you going to raise the baby Jewish?
Of course.
Yes, damn it, yes.
Do?
Well, you are not. Are
no.
you? No, you're not. But it's very nice of you
yes.
to have, you had a Jewish wedding ceremony, and you're going to raise the baby as a Yid, which is, you're bringing someone into the fold. I mean, the baby's already sort of in the fold, because the mom is Jewish. Have you thought about converting, or you're not going to go there?
I had a bar mitzvah.
You had a bar mitzvah?
I had a bar mitzvah growing up, sure.
So you're Jewish?
Sure I am.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. So how do you say that you're not Jewish? You're Jewish.
Well, I go to church with my mom every once in a while.
I go to church for funerals, but it doesn't make me the Pope. Well,
you should rethink that. Maybe it will.
I want to leave you, Adam Shefflin, with such mazel and such good luck, and of course your lovely wife, Stephanie, Dave's cousin, excuse me, oops, made a little boo-boo there, with a blessing and a convocation. Are you ready for your blessing?
Oh, sure. I need one of those. I haven't had one in a while.
Here we go. Here, lower your head and think spiritual thoughts. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam. Let there be light, let there be joy, let there be 10 fingers, 10 toes, and a vagina. May Logan eat from the table of knowledge and poop out all her sins. May she always have enough onions, because you can never have too many onions. May she ride buses and subways and never be annoyed by cell phones. May her enemies be kicked to death by vicious invisible ostriches. May her worst disease be a pimple, and may her worst nightmare end with Golda Meir saving the day. May she one day see Eretz Yisrael, but only after seeing Paris, Rome, and parts of New Rochelle. May she never be home when Jehovah's Witnesses knock, but always home for Publishers Clearinghouse. And to you, and to Stephanie, may Logan be a pleasure to you in your youth, a comfort to you in your old age, and a funding source in your senility. And may Logan grow up to have her own strong, healthy family, and may they give her the joy and nachas that my family doesn't give me. Hear, O Israel, or if you're deaf, feel it. This is my blessing and sanctification on Logan Emily Shefflin. Welcome to the world. It's too late to get out now. Bimru, Amen.
Amen.
Mazel tov to the Shefflins.
Thank you.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine and TotalTheater.com. Yes, we are going inside Broadway because there's so much Broadway going on. This is the time. There are two times of the year that Broadway really perks up and a whole bunch of shows start to open at the same time. Happens in the spring for a couple of weeks before they start nominating things for Tony Awards, and it also happens generally in October up through very early November. You get a whole spate, like almost a dozen different shows opening on Broadway.
It's Broadway's own Oktoberfest.
It is. It's this almost like a festival of shows, because you get two or three a week.
A festival?
So in recent times, we've had Tale of Two Cities. We've had, what else?
Equus.
Equus opened up last week. We were talking about that, or 2 weeks ago it opened up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Title of Show opened a little earlier than that. And now we're going to be reviewing two Broadway shows tonight on Inside Broadway, as well as an off-Broadway show. So stick around. It's going to be fun. Now, to help us review the first show that we're going to deal with, it's a new musical. And what's really kind of interesting and exciting about it is it didn't start off-Broadway, it didn't run for a little while and then be brought uptown, kind of like Spring Awakening did, or the way they did with Title of Show. This one was tried out for a little period out of town, and then bam, right to Broadway. It's by composer Jason Robert Brown, with a book by Dan Ailish and Robert Horn, and it's called 13. And what 13 was kind of special about it is it's about teenagers. Well, that's not so special anymore on Broadway, because every other show now, between Spring Awakening and Grease and, what else, there's one or two others, Legally Blonde. I mean, everything is about
Legally Blonde closes next week.
Yeah, that's right. So, but, you know, that's been running a year and a half or whatever it is. But the thing about 13 is the teenagers are played by actual teenagers. Everyone in the cast is young, assumedly under 17, probably most of them under 14.
I wonder if they've double cast. They've double cast?
I think for maybe one or two roles, but I think most of them are really actually there.
So then they have to
time.
Be like over 15, don't they?
I think they are over 15, but these are not people of driver's ed age. You can sort of see that. So
non-seasoned actors.
So we're going to have with us in the studio someone else who has seen the show. Jeff hasn't been able to catch it yet. So I got a fellow named Joel Markowitz, who writes for DC Theater Scene, Dave.com. He's basically a Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, New York area critic who covers that whole turf, and he's going to help us review 13 and tell us what he thought of that. So first of all, Joel, are you with us?
I'm with you. How are you doing, both of you?
We're good. How was your weekend?
Very busy. I've been in the theater. I wonder why, right?
Well, were you in New York the whole weekend, or?
No, I'm here in D.C., actually.
So what?
I saw a very interesting production of The Producers over at Toby's Dinner Theater. The Dinner Theater of Columbia was wonderful, actually.
My, how the grain have fallen, huh?
They're already doing Producers in Dinner Theater. Was anybody famous in it?
Well, locally they're all famous, I must say. You have to come visit and see all this great talent here in D.C.
Are there any congressmen in it?
Not that we saw, but there was something wiggling under my table. So who knows?
Good Lord.
Barney, friend, get out from under that table.
Well, let's be frank here and talk about 13, right?
Okay. Then let's talk about 13, which is directed by Jeremy Sams, choreographed by Christopher Gattelli, has a score that's basically young-ish, even though it's written by a guy who's got to be in his 30s at this point. What did you think of 13?
Well, you know, when you have a show with kids and real kids playing kids, mm-hmm. there's always something special on Broadway. I think you mentioned about Spring Awakening, where this very dedicated cast stayed with this show for so long, and they really weren't of the age of the characters they were playing, although I love Spring Awakening and a big fan supporter of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice to see these younger kids hitting the right age there on the stage, and also getting a chance to sing this great score by one of my favorite composers, Jason Robert Brown, who, for your audience, probably knows that he won the Tony as a very young guy writing the score for Parade.
Oh.
And he's written two of my favorite shows the last 5 years and Songs for a New World. So to sit there and see Jason there, and I got to bump into him after the show, and he seemed pleased.
Mm-hmm.
And just to sit there and hear these kids singing this wonderful music from the genius of Jason Robert Brown was a real thrill for me.
Why you use the G word? That's interesting. He's a very...
He is a genius, and a lot of people don't know about him, but they will after this.
So it's funny, when we did the little pre-interview, or I talked to you a few seconds a little while ago to make sure the interview was set up, the way you make it sound, it sounded like you didn't like it. And now
I was kibitzing with you.
Oh, because I kind of liked it, too. I had a bit of a problem with the book, because...
The book's got what's that one thing they keep saying, I've got to keep doing my homework?
Yeah.
It's a line they keep using. It's the name of a song in the show. It's called A Little More Homework, and I think they need a little more homework on that book. What do you think?
Well, it's they make things a little too black and white and a little too easy. I mean, aside from the fact that here's this kid, and the story, the whole plot of it is this young bar mitzvah-aged fellow, as bar mitzvah-aged fellows tend to be. He's 13. He's all about to have this big party in New York with all his friends for his bar mitzvah, but his parents split up, and he ends up having to move with his mom all the way to, where is it, Podunk, somewhere, Nowheresville?
Indiana, somewhere.
Worse than Podunk, Indiana.
Right.
And he's got to make all these new friends, or at least try to, and still have this party. And he feels, in a plot point that really feels so after school, not even quite worthy of an after school special, he has to get in with the coolest guy in school, who is, of course, kind of a jerk. And in doing so, he has to betray his next-door neighbor, who's been really nice to him and their close friends. And it's done so boldly and obviously.
It's predictable, don't you think?
Oh, very.
But it's written for kids, so the question is, maybe they didn't want to be so specific and so...
So you think... But that's the crux right there. You think it's really written for kids.
I always stand, there was no intermission here. So what I usually do is, I stand out there like an eavesdropper, you know,
mm-hmm.
at intermission and after the show, and I listen to what people are saying. The kids loved it. I mean, they were eating too much candy and unwrapping stuff during the show. I sat in front of a whole family that decided to bring a whole lunch of Hershey stuff from the Hershey store. I'll tell you, you were lucky you sat in front of me. But these kids, after they finished their lunch, I asked them, and they said, God, we loved it.
Okay.
That's all that counts for me. It's a show for families to introduce their kids to the theater. I think that's great.
Well, that can't be all that counts for you, because then any show that would appeal to kids, and let's face it, you bring the kids to the theater for the first, second, or third time, and unless it's a really boring drama, they're going to be so enamored of it, whether it's this or Legally Blonde or Starlight Express or Cats. I mean, you bring a 10-year-old to Cats.
Let's not mention Cats.
All right, but seriously, a 10-year-old is going to think cats is the best thing in the whole wide world. So that's not necessarily a fully legitimate...
No, that's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is I was looking at the kids that day, and I asked a lot of these families, was it the first time they came to the theater in a long time? And it was. So to introduce their kids to the theater through the show and Jason Robert Brown's great music, to me, that's something good. Is it the world's greatest show? No.
Okay.
We talked about the book has got some problems. The sets are pretty cheap looking, don't you think?
Yeah. It's a funny book, though. I like a lot of the jokes made me actually laugh.
Well, these are written by guys who are Borscht Belt humorists, you know. I know Robert Horn's written for Designing Women.
Hmm.
I mean, these are guys who, you know, they know how to make people laugh.
And I think the thing, but it is the humor, I think, that pushes it. Plus, obviously, Robert Brown's score is kind of cool. So that's what pushes it a little higher than, say, something you would see at TheaterWorks USA, where, you know, it's a balance there of maybe that's where this really belonged, but it's fun and it's good enough, and why not put it on Broadway if people are gonna be attracted to it there? Why not give it that shot?
I'm sorry. You know, the problem is, I don't think you're getting these shows like Title Show, which I love. And you had Glory Days that moved from here to a Broadway theater, and a show like this...
And did very well.
Economy, with the economy the way it is now, is the show worth $111.50, which is a top ticket? Or should they move it off Broadway where the tickets are lower?
Well, Glory Days wasn't worth
$11.50. I'm not going to comment here because I got into enough trouble out here. But anyway... But, really.
This is a
show for families. I don't know what's going to happen with the economy. Let me ask you, is it worth $111.50?
To me, I'm so broke, nothing. The Moses returning would not be $100.
There are very few shows that are worth that.
Jeff is very big on this. Jeff, my co-host on the show, yeah. Jeff Goodman, my guest co-host, is when he reviews a show, one of the things that he specifically does now is try and figure out the cost ratio of what it's actually worth in real terms to people who can basically afford to go to the theater. So he'll put a dollar amount on a show. He hasn't seen 13, but like what Spring Awakening, what's that worth?
Oh, Spring Awakening was a good $90-$100 show.
Hairspray.
But that was with John Gallagher Jr. I thought he was spectacular. So maybe
I agree.
So maybe now it's only 80.
Well, it probably is, yeah, who knows, 80.
So what's this one worth, guys? Tell me. What is this worth to you?
I didn't see 13 yet.
Yeah, but Dave, what's
if I could afford it, you know, I would pay, say, $40-$45 to see it. But if I had, like, two kids, I wouldn't want to pay kid prices for it. I don't want to pay full price for that
either.
Well,
they did have that $13.
Well, that's the big problem today, you know. It's the big problem. Should they put something like this in the New World stages, which I'm a firm believer in for a small show, put it off Broadway, see if you can develop a following, and then consider moving it to Broadway. Because we just saw a bunch of shows going right from, you know, not stopping off Broadway or coming from off Broadway and trying to move uptown and downtown. And,
well, in the Heights,
and they're not working. The Title Show closed tonight.
Well, yeah, but Title is so small. In the Heights moved from off Broadway.
They did it right.
Yeah.
They did it right.
But then you also have 9 to 5, which is coming right from L.A. Mm.
There's a lot of good stuff coming, you know, from out of
9 to
5,
you know, is not going to go to off-Broadway.
I'm not saying it's good,
show.
But it's
and
having
Shrek
a big production
is
right now.
In Seattle.
Out west, so, hey, that's different. That's different. That's a mega show that's going to be a mega hit. So.
Yeah.
That's not the same category here. But a small show, I mean, after watching what happened to Glory Days and the Title Show and... You know, and I
what
can,
did
I
happen
get,
to Glory Days? Can you explain?
I don't want to get into that. There's a great article I wrote comparing In the Heights to Glory Days, what worked and what didn't.
Where can people read that?
On dctheaterscene.com. Just click on my Theater Schmooze column, and you can find it there. Or type in Glory Days in the search thing.
Theater Schmooze. I like that. And how long have you been writing for dctheaterscene.com?
Well, it's been around almost 4 years now. And what I do is I write a column. I'm not a critic. You called me a critic. I almost, you know.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't realize it was
a theatrical journalist.
I don't, you know, that's a word that I can't even, you know, fathom me being critical. I'm a columnist, actually.
Ah.
I write a column called Theater Schmooze.
Okay.
Where I basically give my own opinion. But what I really do is I promote young actors. That's my thing.
Oh.
I write about musicals. So that's why I slept up there. Because I love to see young actors out there on the stage. And this was a very talented cast. Didn't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, a very personable cast. Even the dislikable villain was actually kind of cool and likable in a surfer dude sort of a way.
So are you looking forward to seeing the Billy Elliots?
Well, you know, that just led me into something I was going to give a plug for, Corey Ann Stein. I write a, every couple months I write a feature called Scene Stealers. And I named this kid named Corey Ann Stein. She played the composer in a production of High School Musical over at Music Theater Center in Rockville, Maryland. And she was so fabulous in this production that I wrote her up, and she was like 9 and a half, 10 years old, something like that. And then I got a call from her father that she's now in Billy Elliot.
Oh.
So, yeah, how do you like that?
So that's the Nachas for you. Well, that's the word I'll use. Well, you know the word Nachas.
So here I am, and I'm ready to walk across the street to 13, and I'm ready to write a little note to Corey Ann Stein backstage.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "Mr. Markowitz, it's me." She had grown since I'd seen her. You know?
Oh, well, okay.
And there she was. It was the Nachas thing is true, let me tell you. I felt so good to seeing her, and there she is.
Well, it's nice that
you get to see her in Billy Elliot.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, you saw Billy Elliot already? Has Billy Elliot started previews?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So you saw it. Can you, since you're not a reviewer, you're not a critic, is it great, just in your opinion, from an early preview? Is it really terrific?
I'm hearing amazing things, and the London production is amazing. And what I really respect here,
mm-hmm.
which I'm so glad, I think Elton and John held out here, is they didn't want to Americanize. I mean, Billy Elliot, the way they did Bombay Dreams, which was fabulous in London, and they destroyed it here.
Yeah, it was pretty bland here,
I give them a lot of credit here. They stood by their show.
But are they going to have all the Thatcher jokes and all the, you know,
You know what? This show is so fabulous that, and it's going to, I predict, will sweep all the Tonys unless something amazing comes by, something we don't know about.
Well,
it's going to run for a while.
Hail to Cities?
Hail to Cities wasn't bad.
It's going to run for a while, guys.
Okay, well, we kind of have to run for a bit here because it's 11:58 p.m. already.
Oh my God.
Here on WGBB. But I want to tell everybody and remind everybody again to read your Theater Schmooze column, Joel Markowitz's Theater Schmooze column, at dctheaterscene.com to find out
and
all
my podcast, because I do podcasts.
And your podcast is all there at that website?
Yes, just click on our podcast right on the banner when you go in there.
dctheaterscene.com. Check it out. I want to thank Joel Markowitz so much for being
in
the neighborhood.
Thank you for what you do for theater. I appreciate that.
You're so welcome. Have a great night.
You too.
Bye-bye. Well, that was cool. Joel Markowitz from DCTheaterScene.com helping us.
Not a critic.
Not a columnist, a theater journalist.
No, he said columnist.
Well, a columnist is sort of a journalist, kind of. Theater something. He's a writer. Let's see. Shall we do... Yeah, we have a little time. Let's get to... I'm thinking of saving the seagull. Maybe I'll do First Breeze of Summer, because that's going to be closing in just a week or two.
Okay, do First Breeze of Summer, because I'd love to hear about that.
Well, this is it's already on an extended run. This is towards the end of its run at the Signature Theater Company. Now, the Signature is an off-Broadway playhouse that's on West 42nd Street, all the way over by 11th Avenue. They've been around for about 12 seasons now, and you know, Jeff, what the thing that the Signature does every year. Don't you?
No.
Oh. Well, since they started, they take a full season and they devote it to either a particular playwright or a particular theme.
Oh.
So one year they did entirely, I think, John Guare, and another season they did entirely Lanford Wilson. They're not all new plays.
Okay.
They did one even of Arthur Miller and some of his lesser-known work. So this particular season, the Signature Theater Company is devoting entirely to... plays that were made famous by and had some acclaim at the Negro Ensemble Company, which apparently is still going on, but its heyday was more than 20 years ago. And this is the place where Leslie Lee came from and some other important black playwrights, and certainly important playwrights of the time. So they're out there trying to celebrate that and trying to bring the Negro Ensemble Company back into some level of prominence. And what I got most... from watching First Breeze of Summer was the fact that August Wilson did not arise from a vacuum. He was not part of the Negro Ensemble. He came much later than that. And if you listen to him, and I talked to him when he was alive, he didn't really have much background in theater at all. People accused him of stealing a little bit from Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman when he was writing Fences. And he said, I'd never seen Death of a Salesman. I had a funeral scene in there. The guy dies. You know, that was it. So, but what you see from Leslie Lee's First Breeze of Summer, which is about this black family in the 70s, they're kind of middle class. They have a pretty nice life. But there's all this internal familial struggle. You've got the father, who's a big kind of an angry man. He's a plasterer. One son is following him into the business and is very comfortable in his skin. The other son doesn't want to be a plasterer. He wants to be the brain. He wants to go to college. But he also might be kind of gay, so there's a little bit of problem there. And you get that going on alongside the memory play that is going on with the grandmother of the family. And she remembers all over the years of the relationships she's had and the rather not too wonderful men that were part of her life, including the men who gave her her two children. So the good part about First Breeze of Summer is that it's quite well acted. You get to see Leslie Uggams as the grandmother, and she's having something of a renaissance in her later career between appearing on Broadway in On Golden Pond, and now she's in First Breeze of Summer. She's a really good and believable actress, and she's surrounded by some very good actors here in the Signature production. There's just nothing particularly new here. It's a lot of family drama. They happen to be black, and some of the issues involve racism, and there's some really good monologue stories about what it's like and what it was like back then to be black in America. Even though a lot of the struggle, it isn't just, oh my God, you would figure plays from the 1970s by black playwrights would just be, oh, Whitey is so bad and it's all the white person's fault. And no, it isn't like that. There's internal stuff too that's eating them up from the inside and between each other. So I've got to say, they did a very good job on a pretty good play, but it's really not something you have to rush out and see because there just isn't quite anything new here.
Well, they kind of do because there's not much time before the run-ins.
Yeah, we've got another week or two on it.
Now,
so,
what are the shows they doing this year that are Negro Ensemble?
I don't think they're going to do a Soldier Story. We don't need another Soldier's Story because that's the most famous one because it won the Pulitzer Prize, Charles Fuller's play. But they revived that a couple of years ago off Broadway.
Right.
So I doubt there's the need to do that one. I think they're going to do Home, which is the other famous black play to come out of that era.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure the other stuff that they're doing.
Oh.
And I will say, it's funny, he was talking about the children's matinee when we were talking about the team and the people with the rappers. In the first act, I was so happy that I was placed really, I think I was in the front row to see First Breeze of Summer, which was not so great on my neck, but otherwise it was good because I was away from all the kids there because I saw it on a Wednesday matinee.
Oh.
And I could hear behind me the way children were eating and whispering and giggling in the wrong places, and they weren't a bad group, but they're still, you know what it's like to have a matinee school group.
And the blue-haired ladies were going, shh.
Well, I don't know, what color does black women's hair turn?
Blue.
We
all turn blue.
So I don't know how they did it. I don't know who the teacher was, but they took the kids outside just basically to make an announcement at intermission not to eat, because you're not supposed to be eating in that theater. And you could hear a pin drop through the second act.
Wow.
So thank you to that marvelous teacher who managed to make an entire school trip really be quiet during the second act. And it helped. It was kind of nice. But, you know, we'll get to the Seagull next week because it's already 12:05 here on WGBB Freeport. But in Seagull, if I tell you, trying to watch that show while behind me, two old women, I'm talking old, had sucking candies.
They knew Chekhov.
That's right. Not only knew him, they babysat him. But so these old women had these sucking candies. No, they weren't like that. They were like every other line you hear.
Oh, my God.
In the most important, intense scenes of the show, you'd be trying to concentrate on Trigorin and Nina, or Nina and Treplev, and they'd be saying something, and then, behind me, if I tell you. And what do you say to them? You can't say, don't rustle your paper, because they're not rustling paper. They're not talking. They're not doing...
Stop sucking.
Stop sucking. So
stop smacking.
It's just the luck of the draw. When I went to see A Man for All Seasons, there had to be 10 cell phones ringing during the second act. Mm-hmm. I swear to God. People...
Of course, there were all people who'd seen the show previously going, go, get out now while you can.
So let's talk about those two shows next week, The Seagull and also A Man for All Seasons. But I'll give a moderate thumbs up for First Breeze of Summer and a pretty good thumbs up, too, for 13 as we move inside Broadway. Yes, it is Broadway, the best way of performing arts insider. I totally forgot. We didn't get a chance to do the Broadway news yet.
From Broadway News.
Yes, indeed. So, as you mentioned before, title of show closed today.
I didn't mention that.
October 12th. Somebody, yeah, that was... Oh, the Joel did. Joel Markowitz. After 102 performances. I just... As much as I like the show off Broadway, and it has a lot of lovely stuff in it, I don't know how they thought it could run. It's just so small and so insular.
What's nice, I saw it a couple weeks ago...
Yeah.
Again.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, first of all, it's just a wonderful show. But what's great is now that the show, once the show knew it was doomed, I think they just were papering it with people who were seeing it over and over again.
All right.
Because they have this fan club up in the balcony, which is hilarious to see the show with. Because they're so into it.
Well, or they were. So, I mean, they got them. I feel better about this show. It had 100 performances. Not like Glory Days. It wasn't this disaster. Everybody knew it was a good, very clever piece of work that was just in the wrong place. You know?
But they did get to Broadway, and they did have the chairs with diamonds.
And it will now be done in every community theater and every college theater.
That's why I think they brought it to Broadway.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just to say it had a Broadway run.
Now, talk about publicity and having a Broadway run and bringing things around. You're familiar with press agent Judy Jack Singer, right?
Love her.
She'll do anything to get a show out there. She's
Judy,
the best press
hire releases. Judy Kilforest.
Because that's right. Even now, when everybody does everything by the Internet, she sends out like 12-page press releases.
Well,
38-point type and color.
Didn't you get offered when you went to see Tale of Two Cities? Would you like the script?
Oh, I didn't even... No, I don't remember getting the script.
Sure, I took one.
Oh, good for you. Look what happened. This she didn't even make this happen. But sometimes if you shake the tree enough, you get lucky, like Judy Jackson. Tale of Two Cities made the news. Do you know why?
Why?
During President Bush's speech, trying to bail out the economy, one of the more recent speeches, this week, okay, in New York, WNBC had a glitch. And while Bush was speaking, suddenly it cut to someone in Tale of Two Cities going, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, and the rabble getting rebellious against the government. And it lasted for about 5 seconds or something, and then went back. So if there was ever a marvelously editorial context for...
I wonder if that was a true glitch.
Oh, yeah. You don't call it the press agent.
I think heads are rolling.
Even in this, yeah, that's very possible. And hey, here, speaking of something happy, something good, let's talk about a hit also off-Broadway called What's That Smell?
Oh, I love that title.
What's That Smell? The music of Jacob Sterling, which is the story of a very fictitious and very bad musical theater composer who's still trying to write his great opus.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to be very, very funny. I did not see it. And very,
but it's
very
transferring.
Good. That's right. It closed, I think, last week. It's going to be moving to New World Stages in early November. So I'm really, really want to see it. And so congratulations to David Pitou, who wrote the show and stars in What's That Smell. Definitely look for it, because it's one of the sleeper hits already.
He stars with one of my favorite people, although I can't remember his name now.
Oh.
He was the guy, he was in,
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness, he just closed in Lincoln Center with the new,
Not South Pacific.
No. The new,
Oh, well.
Who wrote Jeffrey?
Paul Rudnick. Peter Bartlett.
Yeah.
I bet you're talking, Peter Bartlett was in, well, he's still going to be in it in New World Stages, I'm sure.
I love Peter Bartlett. I think
he's
Peter
very
Bartlett
funny.
Is hilarious.
Okay, now...
Big fan of Peter.
Going to... What? You may want to rephrase that line.
Big fan of Peter Bartlett.
Better, much better.
Sorry.
Okay.
And I also like Bartlett Paris, which is kind of...
Yeah, okay. To be speaking of shows that may quite not be a hit, it's not fair to predict failure. But if there's a show that people are kind of predicting not such good things for, it's not a revival. It's actually the production, the new production of To Be or Not To Be, based on that old Jack Benny movie from the 1940s. Manhattan Theater Club is bringing it to Broadway, their Samuel J. Friedman Theater, and it opens on Tuesday, October 14th.
You know, it's the Samuel J. Friedman Theater used to be.
Well, it's named after a press agent now. It was the Biltmore.
Right.
Right. So they've changed the Biltmore to the Friedman. Right. It's over on 47th, right? Right by 8th Avenue?
It's Manhattan Theater Club.
Well, they own it now, but they didn't always, obviously. That's their first Broadway theater.
You know, big hit started at the Biltmore?
What?
Hair.
Oh, that started the Biltmore. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know it ran there forever after that Cheetah Club or something like that. And first it was at the Public, then it went to the Cheetah Club, and then to the Biltmore. But coming to the Biltmore, opening on Tuesday is To Be or Not To Be.
No, coming to the Friedman.
To Friedman, excuse me. With Craig Bierko and Brian Murray are not in the cast. They were the two actors who walked away from it in rehearsals. But still, it has Jan Maxwell. So...
And who else who took over the roles?
David Rashi, who's not an actor that I've seen to good effect recently, so maybe this will be a change for him.
Like Rhoda or something, right?
No, that's David Groh.
Oh.
David Rashi, you'll recognize him.
Oh, I know, he did a couple of sitcoms.
Yeah. So anyway, the buzz was so negative during the rehearsal process that at least now some of the buzz coming back is, oh, it's not so bad. But we will see. Not fair to pre-review things, but you may want to check out To Be or Not To Be at the Friedman Theater opening on Tuesday. Also opening this week, a little bit more of an anticipated show, even though God knows why Broadway needs to see another revival of All My Sons, but there it is. Arthur Miller's All My Sons, directed by Simon McBurney.
It's not because they need a revival of All My Sons. They're trying to see Mrs. Tom Cruise.
Actually, this was in the hopper before she signed on. It was going to be a John Lithgow vehicle, which mm-hmm. it is. John Lithgow is starring in the main role.
Right.
Just, it was off Broadway with John Cullum less than 10 years ago. Okay, maybe it's really good. And she's apparently very good, so we'll see. It's a small role. If you're going to see Katie Holmes, you'll see her. She'll probably be around for about half an hour out of the 2 hours, but it's really, you're going to see Lithgow.
It's a great show.
It's a very good play. It really is. And it's opening this Thursday, October 16th, at, I don't have the theater in front of me. It's also got Diane Wiest and Patrick Wilson in it. And the one thing, at first they were saying, okay, unlike Tom Cruise's first wife, Nicole Kidman, well, actually it's his second wife, Kidman sold all those tickets for the Blue Room because everybody wanted to see her butt.
Right.
And Katie Holmes wasn't selling anything. All My Sons is now selling very, very well.
Yeah.
So maybe that was a little premature. And finally, in Broadway news, happy birthday, Mamma Mia! Happy birthday, Mamma Mia! Turning seven. Well, seventh birthday. I guess that means it's starting its eighth year.
Mamma Mia.
It opened in October of 2001, which I think really helped it because people were so... I mean, if you think we're going through bad times now, try and picture back what life was like in New York.
I remember I was there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that helped Mamma Mia build a fan base and get critical acclaim.
It's a feel-good musical.
And people
but there's more news, too.
About what?
So they have gotten a tenant for the Niederlander Theater.
What? Oh, that's where Rent was.
Yeah.
What's going into the Niederlander?
A revival of Guys and Dolls.
I didn't hear this. When did you hear? Oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay. Is that the English production or a brand new American thing?
Brand new American production. It's going to be directed by... who just directed Gypsy?
Arthur Lawrence?
Wait. Who wrote the book for...
Arthur Lawrence.
Yeah.
No, the book, not the book for Guys and Dolls. I mean, the book for Gypsy.
For Guys and Dolls.
Frank Lesser and, all those people are dead, man.
Maybe Arthur Lawrence is directing it. I forget, but someone...
No, Lawrence is busy directing West Side Story, unless he's going to do Guys and Dolls after that. Well, we'll look it up and we'll get it to you next time.
Yeah.
But that's cool to hear that Guys and Dolls is coming back. The last revival was with Nathan Lane. Faith Prince. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to it. There's so much to look forward to inside. Whoops, let me make sure I have the the right thing queued up for that. Got to do it right. Yeah. We're going...
outside now. Outside Broadway.
That's it. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Dave's gone by. Dave's gone by.
There goes the neighborhood indeed. Going to wrap things up quickly here.
We're closing another episode. Oh.
Didn't this one go, like, so fast? So I want to thank a few people. First of all, thank you so much to my cousin, Stephanie, and her husband. I guess they're both cousins, or does that make them a cousin-in-law?
No cousins.
And mazel tov to them on Logan Emily Shefflin, 6 pounds, 8 ounces, born on Yom Kippur. Much health and much success.
Her
much
initials
love.
Are less, which means she's more.
Oh, her initials are less. Guess what? Stephanie's father died this year. He died a few months ago. His name was Les. So that works out really, really well. That's
there
pretty
we
neat. Also want to thank so much to Joel Markowitz for of DCTheaterScene.com. Thanks for
nice
helping Inside Broadway.
That's a mensch.
Check out his column, Theater Schmooze, and see what he's writing about theater in New York, in Philadelphia, in D.C., cool stuff. Very quickly, let's also thank all our wonderful sponsors, including the Woodrow Delicatessen. Yum, yum, delicious, fresh, great cold cuts, great entrees, great food.
What shopping center is it in?
The Peninsula Shopping Center, kosher, open 7 days. Go to the Woodrow, tell them Dave sent you.
And leave off the last W for something.
For something. Remember, there's that contest.
How about the Hewlett-Minuteman Press?
Hewlett-Minuteman Press, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. At Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, open 6 days, whereas the Woodrow's open 7. This is open 6 days for all your printing and binding
needs.
And if
you don't want to copy anything, you want something original, call Fancy Schmancy Balloons at 516-797-3229 for all your party decorating needs. That's Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229.
And this program is also brought to you by you! Oh, by... Well, I'm getting them confused today by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway for 65 years. Go to davesgoneby.org to find out how you can get a great discount on subscriptions to Performing Arts Insider Theater
Magazine. That's davesgoneby.org?
Yeah, davesgoneby.org. That's also the place to find out all about this program, to hear older episodes of the show for free anytime. Davesgoneby.org.
Dave,
it's all there.
What are we going to listen to now?
Well... Just a second. I need to do a couple of other quick things. Reminding you also that Shalom Dammit, you can still watch all the episodes on YouTube anytime at all. You can watch episodes of Shalom Dammit with Rabbi Saul Solomon. Thanks also to him for taking part in the Stephanie interview. It's on Long Island Cablevision Wednesdays at 8 on Channel 115, 8 in the morning, that is, and Fridays at 4:30 a.m. on Channel 20. Also, for our New York listeners, it's on Manhattan Neighborhood Network, Channel 67 at 1:30 in the afternoon, or you can go to MNN.org and watch it on the Internet. And reminder also to check out TotalTheater.com, where there are 1,800 theater reviews waiting to be read by you. Look out for Filler Up, the music show I do on this station. Go to WGBB's website to find out when that is on. And want to thank my good co-host, Jeff Goodman, for being with me. Love to my mom and dad, and of course, my beautiful and wonderful and overworked, but still cheerful and lovable
Yay,
wife.
Yay, Joyce.
Yay, Joyce. Well, it is time to leave the neighborhood, but I will be back next Sunday, October 19th.
And if you hang on, we'll be back in about an hour, right?
Oh, yeah, we're still awake and alive. Maybe a half hour, actually.
For JR through the night.
JR through
the night. I mean, DJ through the night.
Through the night. Won't really be through the night. Be a little bit of time. But for Dave's Gone By purposes, we'll be back next Sunday, October 19th, 2008, with a 295th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you a good night. Hello, Columbus.
And gone by.